Do stacks of homework actually help kids learn more, or are after-school assignments pointless? I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you about a study that measured the benefits of homework on student achievement in a moment.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
Teachers hand out homework to reinforce the day's lessons and build character, and many kids spend several hours on homework each night. But a new study shows that primary school homework actually offers no real benefit and has only limited results for students at the junior high level. Researchers looked at 10,000 children in various countries, comparing the academic performance of those who did homework and those who did not. They found that only juniors and seniors in high school benefited from doing homework, and even then, only slightly. Maybe it's time to lighten the homework load so kids can spend more time with the key educators in their lives, their parents. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht for StartMail. Get a 7-day free trial today.
This is the Dr. Katherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. As they march into the palaces of the high and mighty, I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Dr. Katherine Albrecht Show. I'm your host, Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and so delighted to be here with you today. I want to talk today about money, one of the issues that actually I don't think I've talked about very much on the show before, but I had an interesting conversation with my kids today, and just thinking about the difference between how kids think about money, how you think about money in certain contexts, different from other contexts. And it got me realizing that one of the reasons that people struggle with living paycheck to paycheck, struggle with poverty, and struggle in, those lottery winners who take home, I don't know, $50 million, $100 million or more, and declare bankruptcy. And I got to thinking, what is that? What is really the message there? Well, first, let me start by giving you some statistics here. Some sources go so far as to say, this is the American Bankruptcy Institute, by the way. 70% of lottery winners wind up declaring bankruptcy. Not just going through their money and winding up with nothing, but actually getting themselves into debt. And how do you win, a couple hundred million dollars and wind up having to declare bankruptcy because you're actually in debt? All right, this is more conservative estimates, put the number at 30%. So it's somewhere between 30 and 70%. But you would think it would be none, right? You would think of all the people to not need to declare bankruptcy, it would be the people with enormous, incredible amounts of money. After all, the majority of us are living on, just a normal amount of money. We have to think about money and we don't have endless quantities of it, but we're not bankrupt. So how is it that us with so much less money are less likely to become bankrupt than them? And so in thinking about it today, it kind of hit me. So I have, I know some young people, in fact, I know a number of young people who have gotten jobs and are earning money for the first time in their lives. Maybe it's young teenagers, maybe they're washing cars or working, flipping burgers, you know, the kind of early life stage jobs, and they get their first paycheck. And let's say that first paycheck is, oh, I don't know, $150. Instead of thinking about that the way, you know, people who've been in the professional world for a while and are responsible with managing money, they don't think about, well, I have $150, what should I do? Well, if I'm going to be saving towards, oh, I don't know, college, buying a new car, that trip I want to take next year, or just to have a nest egg in the bank, then how much of that $150 can I afford to spend today or this week or before in the next 2 weeks before I get my next paycheck? And the responsible answer, I think, for, you know, those of us who, when our paycheck comes in, it's $2,000 or $3,000, and we say, well, let's see, I've got to pay my rent and I need to buy groceries, I'm gonna have to get gas, I've got an insurance payment due. We kind of mentally calculate the expenses that are due. And then if there's money left over after the expenses, then we think to ourselves, well, I could spend that and splurge on something that's kind of fun. I could go to dinner. I could buy a new, you know, I don't, depending on your gender, buy a new dress, or maybe buy a new piece of sporting equipment, or some new fishing lures, or whatever it is you're into. But you're thinking about that sort of after the other expenses are paid. And at the end of that, you may say to yourself, well, out of that $2,500 that I just got, $1,800 of it is accounted for, $700 is sitting there, and let me think what to do. I think I'll spend $200 of it on my new dress and a new pair of shoes, or on my new fishing line, and maybe make a payment on my boat. And the rest of it I'll just put in the bank. Okay. Well, think of the difference between a person who has those responsibilities and is accustomed to paying the mortgage and paying, or the rent, or paying, you know, paying those regular bills we all have to pay every month. And instead, think back to when you were, oh, I don't know, maybe in eighth grade, and it was your birthday. And at your birthday, your Aunt Kyra gave you a birthday card, and you opened it up. And inside the birthday card was a $100 gift certificate to fill in the blank. Now, maybe that was a $100 gift certificate. I know in my family, it typically tended to be Barnes & Noble. So if you're into books, Barnes & Noble would be a good gift. If you're not, think of maybe your equivalent place that you like to shop. Maybe Bed Bath & Beyond. Maybe Bath & Body Works. Maybe, fill in the blank of whatever kind of splurgeful place. It's not really... none of those are really places that you go because you have to. They're not like the grocery store. Most people typically do not put a $100 gift certificate to Kroger in your birthday card. So they want to give you a gift. They want it to be a splurge. Now, when you have that $100 gift certificate and you go to, say, Barnes & Noble, what's in your head? Is what's in your mind, how much of this, how little of this can I spend? How much of this can I set aside? What is the cheapest thing I can find in this Barnes & Noble to meet my needs? No, that's not at all what you're thinking. When you get that $100 gift certificate and you go to Barnes & Noble, your goal with the gift certificate is to find items that will add up to $100 so you can spend it all. Because whatever you don't spend, it's not like you're going to get it back in cash. You can't put it in the bank. You can't really save it. And we all have gift cards that have like little percentages, small amounts left over on them. And that's no fun because you'll never really use them. So the mindset that gift, and I don't give gift cards. I don't like receiving them. I don't like giving them. And now I realize why. The mindset that a gift card gives you in terms of how to spend your money is the mindset that says, I have $100. I better spend it all. I have to spend it all. In fact, this $100 is kind of obligating me to buy stuff even at a store I don't really like. I know one time my daughter got a $100 gift certificate to Macy's. And we went to Macy's, and one t-shirt was $60. And so she's like, I don't like this store. If I had $100 and I could go to a store that I like, I could get multiple t-shirts. I could probably get a whole bunch of things. But because it's Macy's, this $100 is not going to go very far. I don't really like Macy's, but I have this gift certificate, so I better spend it. And so we searched around the store and we found some items that would not have been, by any stretch, something we would have bought normally. Wouldn't have been a store we would have shopped at normally. And we wouldn't have normally paid those prices. And it wasn't like a great, yay, I can afford something good. It was a, I'm spending all, you know, look, this is really expensive, but I guess I got something out of it. So we came home with the Macy's bag, and it was nobody's favorite item. So the mindset that a gift card gives you is the mindset of, I don't really even like this place necessarily, because usually it reflects the taste of the gift giver, not the recipient, so not you. And the mindset also is, I better go and find something in this store so I can spend the money. All right. Now, there's a second place that this mentality comes up as well, and that is in annual budgets, particularly for government agencies. If you're running a government agency and your department has a budget of, oh, I don't know, $50,000, and at the end of the year, if you only spend $40,000 of it, what will happen next year? Well, your budget will be reduced to $40,000 next year. So what frequently happens, and again, this is kind of built in, kind of baked into the way these things work, I think inadvertently, is what you find government agencies doing, or really any corporate environment or agency or, you know, office or, you know, structure that is given a budget and is has to spend all of the budget or their budget will be reduced. What an awful, what a terrible disincentive that is to save money. And you'll often find government agencies, as they near the end of their fiscal year, going out of their way, searching for ridiculous ways to spend money because they're worried that the next year they won't have the budget if they don't spend it all. And so, and we've all been in this situation. It happens around Christmas too. Have you ever been shopping a couple days before Christmas and you remember a couple of people that you need to buy for, and maybe you just didn't have time? And you're going through the stores and you don't even care what the thing is. As long as you got the money, you're just going to buy any old slop, wrap it up just so you can say you have a gift. It's kind of that mindset. All right. Well, when we come back, I want to tie this in to explain why I think the lottery, this mindset leads to people going bankrupt after the lottery, and also leads many of us to poor financial management. All right. Stay tuned. I'm Catherine Albrecht. I'll be right back.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Has come to save me.
Trust in him and not be afraid. Lord God is my strength and my song. He has given me victory. And with joy I will drink deeply from the fountain of salvation. And in that wonderful day I will sing, thank the Lord, I praise his name. Thank the Lord, I praise his name. Thank the Lord, I praise his name.
All right, I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. Oh, so pretty. That's, of course, Project of Love, and we try to post all the links if we can in the archives. You can find those if you go to catherine-albrecht.com and click on Radio Show. You can navigate to the date. Today is August 26th, 2025. There we go. And so beautiful. All right, talking about spending money and this realization I had today about two very different mindsets. I guess there's sort of three mindsets I can think of regarding money. One of them is the gift card mindset. If I get a paycheck of $150 on my first job flipping burgers, then I have $150 in my hand. And you know the phrase, it's burning a hole through your pocket? It's kind of burning a hole through my pocket because I have the gift card mentality. Except now I'm not limited to just Barnes & Noble or Bath & Body Works, but now I can go on Amazon. I can go anywhere. I can go to a restaurant. I can do whatever I want. But I have $150 and I'm going to spend it. All right. The second mindset is, the mature and appropriate money management mindset says, let me think, what do I have to do with this money? What are my obligations? What must I pay for? And what should I be setting aside to pay for other things I'm going to have to pay for? And of what is left, how much do I want to save? How much do I want to invest? There's a thought. And how much do I want to just kind of blow, right? So that's sort of the second mindset where you're thinking it through. And then the third mindset is not going to spend a penny, going to be the cheapest miser I can be, right? And that's that miserly, that kind of Scrooge attitude where, you know, mine, I'm going to put it in the bank and watch it grow and not touch it. And I'm going to live, you know, with a 160-watt light bulb on in my whole house because I don't want to spend any money and have it all pile up in the bank and accumulate and just be a miser and not really have any joy out of life. All right. So the lottery winners, hang on, I got a story here. All right. I got a couple articles here. I think that the reason that the poor live paycheck to paycheck and the reason that when people with that paycheck to paycheck gift card mentality win the lottery, the reason they go bankrupt is that if you get $300 million, if you have mindset number two, the responsible financial mindset, you're thinking $300 million, my gosh, I'm going to pay off my house. I'm going to upgrade my car. I'm going to pay off my my college debt. I'm going to, whatever it might be. But you think of the things you really have needed money for and want to pay off. And then you think, now how much do I have left? Well, $290 million plus change. So, or $299 million, I guess. What am I going to do with that? Well, are you thinking to yourself that you're going to go and buy a $200 million mansion that it's a gift card. Like, the world is your Barnes & Noble, and you need to go out there and figure out what to spend $300 million on. Do you remember the TV shows? People are old enough to remember this. There used to be a TV show where they would give people, they'd have maybe three people in the grocery store, and they would give them each $1,000, that's just making that up, and a grocery cart. And they would say, you have exactly 5 minutes, or however many minutes, to get as close to $1,000 without going over as you can possibly get. And you would see these three people, usually be like two guys and a woman or two women and a man. You'd see them running around the store, just running, pushing their cart and opening up the freezer case and grabbing all the lobster legs and putting them in the cart. And then they'd run over and they'd grab all of the filet mignons and put them in the cart. I think they had a rule that you could only get like two of any one given item. And then they would go, so they were searching through the store for the most expensive items they could find, because the whole goal of this contest was to spend as much money as possible. And I kind of feel like lottery winners who get $300 million are doing that, but instead of it being a grocery store, it's the world, right? How in the world am I going to spend $300 million? Like, how do I even do that? And sort of like when you go to Barnes & Noble and you don't like Barnes & Noble and you don't even like books, you're like, how am I going to spend $100 in this place? But I got to do it. That is that mindset of must get this money spent as soon as possible is the mindset that makes between 30 and 70% of lottery winners, depending on whose statistics you believe, go bankrupt. All right. I'm going to read this. They call it the lottery curse. This is the American Bankruptcy Institute. And then I'm going to share a couple of stories of how people just went through incredible amounts of money. Are lottery winners more likely to declare bankruptcy? Unless you were born into an incredibly wealthy family, you probably daydreamed about winning the lottery at least once or twice. A large windfall of cash could get you out of debt, let you purchase a home, and maybe even enjoy an early retirement. But unfortunately, winning the lottery doesn't necessarily mean freedom from financial difficulties for the rest of your life. No? Many lottery winners, some say up to 70%, declare bankruptcy. Right? A substantial number of lottery winners end up in bankruptcy court. Now, why is that? All right. The odds of bankruptcy after winning the lottery, the chances that someone will win the lottery, especially a Powerball type, are astronomically minuscule. About a third of lottery winners wind up in bankruptcy court. They're also more likely than the average person to go bankrupt within 3 to 5 years of their big win. So it took them a little while. They're running through the aisles, grabbing everything they can find. And it took them 3 to 5 years to fill their grocery cart with $300 million worth of stuff. But they did it, right? This is general advice, advice among financial experts for people who win the lottery. They should choose installments rather than a lump sum payment. Now, think about that. You're not going to go bankrupt. If you have an installment of $100,000 every 2 months, you can go out and you can blow through that $100,000 in 2 months, gift card style. And when you're done and have nothing, another 100K comes in and you get to do it again and you get to do it over and over and over again. That is a much less likely to become, that approach is much less likely to make you become bankrupt. However, that mindset still isn't a good idea. When wealthy people win the lottery, or when financially responsible people win the lottery who have not been poor and haven't been in that kind of, like, the minute I have money, I have to spend it kind of mentality, they tend to invest, right? That's what, you pay off your mortgage, you buy yourself a new car, maybe a new wardrobe, maybe trip to Europe. But when you're done, you've maybe spent $500,000 and you've now got another $299 million left. What are you going to do with it? Well, you give some of it out to friends and family in need. Maybe you donate. Maybe you give some of it to charity. But you're probably going to need to sit down with a financial advisor who knows how to invest that kind of money and find a place to invest. Maybe buy an apartment building. Maybe put it in the stock market into some, maybe you find a couple risky stocks, but for the most part, you want secure stocks so that you know that money is not going to go away. Maybe it'll grow, hopefully. That's what people do, because that's what people with responsible financial habits do when they win the lottery, because that's what they've been doing all along. There's nothing new. It's just now they're doing it with more money. And the people who are poor, who have this gift card mentality, spend it all the minute you get it, well, when they get a lot, that's just what they do, because that's what they've been doing all along. So what kind of training do we need? I had this conversation with my daughter actually today. And she, in high school, was, I don't know if it was a requirement. I think it was one of her, you know, like strongly suggested classes. It might have been a requirement. She had to take a six-month course in financial management. I think it was a Dave Ramsey course, actually. He does a good job. In this course, she had to learn about what's an interest rate, when you open a bank account, what is the difference between a checking and a savings account? How do you write a check? Not that people have to do it much anymore, but she learned it. What is a retirement account? What is, when you belong to a union, what are union dues? So she had to learn all of these basics, like when you get a credit card, what does it mean if it has 24% interest? And what does that look like if you just let that interest build up? So those are the things she learned. But what they didn't teach her was this don't have a gift card mentality. When you get money, don't try to figure out how to spend it as quickly as possible. All right, I got some pretty funny stories. They're pretty tragic, pretty sad. When we come back, I'll tell you how people have blown through a whole lot of cash. Stay tuned.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. Is born to us, a son is given to us, the government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called, he will be called, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father.
I'm back. Beautiful. All right. We're talking about winning the lottery, and why is it that so many people who win the lottery go bankrupt? Peter has just pointed out to me something actually that's really relevant, in that instead of saying people who win the lottery are likely to go bankrupt, it is people who have poor financial management skills are likely to go bankrupt, and they are disproportionately selected for among the lottery ticket buying crowd. Buying a lottery ticket is a very poor financial decision. And I remember I got a phone call. I was 18 years old. I was living in LA County. And I got a phone call because it was illegal. Lotteries and gambling were not legal in California at that time. And I was asked on the phone, they said, are you over 18? Are you a voter? I said, yes. They asked, would you approve if a lottery were introduced in the state of California? And I said, I guess. What did I know? I said, I think so. Well, anyway, I guess enough people said that they went ahead and introduced it, and we got a lottery in California. What I now know, and what I wish I'd known then, not that my one answer would have made much difference, but what I wish all the people in California had known in order to oppose that, is that lotteries, they appeal to the gambler in people, and they appeal to poor people because they offer the promise of having a whole lot of money to people who don't have money to waste on lottery tickets. I know there are people, I've seen them in stores, who you can tell they don't have any money, and yet there they are with their $100 buying lottery tickets, buying Powerball tickets. Their chances of winning are slim to none. They're not going to win. But that $100 that they needed to be spending for diapers for their kids or for nutritious food or even just to put gas in their cars, they're spending on a pipe dream that they're going to win the lottery. So if one of those people who's already making poor financial decisions by blowing that they need for other things on lottery tickets wins the lottery, well, they're going to have a bad approach to handling money in the first place. Just a priori, you're more likely to see people like that winning the lottery. That's why generally lottery winners seem to be people who need the money. I really need the money. People who don't need the money don't buy the lottery tickets typically. All right, I want to read you a couple of stories. Let's see if I can find my window here. Hang on. All right, this is 24 lottery winners who lost it all. All right, in 2002, let's talk about the case of Jack Whitaker. He won a $314 million Powerball jackpot. At the time, that was the largest lottery prize in history anywhere. All right. The West Virginia construction worker, known for wearing outsized cowboy hats and having an even bigger personality, remains one of the most extreme cautionary tales about the lottery's power to ruin lives. Whitaker reveled in the ability to give handouts, which he did until the money ran out. He donated stacks of cash to churches, diner waitresses, family members, strangers, and his local strip club. His life turned to turmoil, according to people they interviewed. He shared with ABC News that he actually thought he was cursed. His wife left him. His house burned down. He got in trouble with the law. He lost his daughter to cancer, and he lost his granddaughter to drugs. And in 2020, he died at the age of 72. All right. I bet you that if we took a look at that construction worker's life before winning the lottery, that he had a gift card mentality. Have the money, spend it. And think about it. You're in the store, right? You're racing around with your grocery cart. You're trying to spend the $1,000 as fast as possible. Well, let's say that one of the rules of that game were that if there were people standing around, you could give as much money to them as you wanted. Well, you'd probably grab the two packs of lobster tails, the two packs of filet mignon, and then you'd see the cashier and you go, here, have $100, right? You'd see bag boys? That doesn't sound right, but the guy bagging up your grocery, here, have $100, right? You'd find the person in the back, you know, stocking the cans on the shelf, here, have $100. Well, that's what these people do. And it's not an overwhelming sense of generosity. It's a sense that, just like Barnes & Noble, well, here's something maybe I could buy. Guess I could use a Scrabble game. This puzzle looks okay. It's $30. Wow, I'm getting closer to spending my $100 gift card. All right, let me read you the next one. Laura and Roger Griffiths, their marriage ended in divorce less than a decade after they won a $2.19 million jackpot. Roger chased his rock star dreams. You know, $2 million, it's not, that's a windfall for sure, but it's not $300 million. But still, I have a personal friend through my church years ago who won the lottery. Actually won the lottery. I've never met somebody who did other than him. And I think he got close to $2 million. And about 3-4 years later, every bit of it was gone, right? Laura got a taste for the high life as the couple paid for exotic cars, an expensive house, designer clothes and accessories, and sent their daughter to a pricey private school. They dumped hundreds of thousands of dollars into opening a salon where Laura later worked as an employee to make ends meet. In the end, they had less than $10, but I guess they didn't declare bankruptcy. David Lee Edwards, there's a picture of him, that's an ad. All right. 5 years after Kentucky resident David Lee Edwards won $27 million in a jackpot, he was penniless and living in a storage shed with his wife. They squandered their fortune on the typical goodies that sink so many lottery winners, buying dozens of high-end cars, mansions, and a plane. Now, nobody needs dozens of cars. Just like when you get that gift certificate, you do not need to peruse the aisles looking for a book or multiple books. Or my daughter didn't really want anything from Macy's, but she went, she found something, and if she had $2 million to spend at Macy's, she probably, you know, given enough time, would have found a way to get rid of it all. All right. They blew through $3 million in the first 3 months, but, you know, that wasn't much. They had $27 million. By the end of the first year, they had blown through $12 million. And again, I'm thinking of these people with their carts, like, How do I spend it? And it takes a while. Part of the excitement of that show was, the fact that they were in a rush and you were asking yourself, are they even going to manage to do this in 5 minutes? Right. So hand over fist, just handing it out. So, and I'm hearing, I have no idea what it says. JD's telling me that I have a text. Don't. Oh, there we go. All right. So get a text here from Ray. Hang on. Who remembers the blue light specials at Kmart? And then did you ever see the movie In Time? It's a present idea about the lottery. No, I have not. Movie In Time. I will check it out. All right. Speaking of movies, there is a book that I'm going to recommend that I think, I read it. I actually listened to the audio version of it. It's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that's now a really controversial book because it turns out the guy who wrote it, you know, made up a bunch of it. And there's some controversy around that book and some issues that, you know, but the messages in it were great. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, let me bring up my description of it and I'll tell you. All right, here's the synopsis. It's by Robert Kiyosaki. It contrasts the financial philosophies of two father figures, his biological dad, which he calls the poor dad, and his best friend's father, who he calls the rich dad. And it emphasizes the importance of financial literacy, understanding assets versus liabilities. And I remember a section in there that I've thought about many times since reading that book or listening to it. He talks about getting, let's say you get $10,000, right? If you get $10,000, I believe in his book he talked about one of the dads going, I'm going to get a boat. I'm going to buy a boat. And buying a boat is, think about it, the value of the boat when you buy it today is maybe 10 grand. Next year, or 5 minutes after you take it out of the boat, you know, the boat lot, it's worth maybe 7 grand, maybe 6. And after a year or two, it's worth maybe 5, maybe 4. And eventually, 10 years later, your $10,000 boat is going to be worth very little. If you put it up on, Facebook Marketplace, you could maybe get $1,500 for it. In contrast, or by way of contrast, the rich dad would get the 10 grand and think about where he could put it to turn it into an asset. If he invested that in the stock market 10 years later, it's actually going to be worth more. So I've thought about this a lot. When I get money, I think about where can I put this so that at the very least it doesn't depreciate and wind up being worth nothing. Where can I put it? First pay off debt so you reduce your interest, but if your debts are paid off, where do you put the money?
I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
You wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
For the mountains, my moon, and the hills disappear.
Blessing that comes from Isaiah, and that whole section in the Isaiah in the 50s of the book of Isaiah in the Old Testament, the prophet Isaiah, is so incredibly beautiful. And that particular song, that particular scripture, you will soon be busting at the seams, enlarge your house, make your tent bigger, because God is about to pour out a blessing. I talked on an earlier show about this Goldilocks mentality, this mentality of having too much or too little. And it's really what the enemy would have us do, the enemy of our souls, Satan himself, that you either have to have everything, like you need all of it, mine, or you have this kind of, I'm not going to spend anything. I'm just going to, I'm always going to be poor. I'm going to have nothing. The sweet spot is right in the middle. The sweet spot is where the Lord provides you with just enough. Just the right amount. Not too much, not too little. Just right. The lottery winners, I think, really exemplify that, don't they? They have lived in this not enough place, and then they got too much, and they went back in the not enough, but they never really hit the sweet spot in the middle. All right, I want to talk about the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Say what you will about it, but I found it incredible. Really good book. This is a Reddit thread, and I'll post a link to it. It says, here's a book summary on the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's posted 6 years ago. It's one of the best introductory books to personal finance, and this is my third time reading it. I read it through for the purposes of making this summary. So here's a summary, and they also, this person, Betterment Book Club Optimum Insight, this person actually did an animated version, which I have not clicked. I don't know if it's any good, but you can find it here in the Reddit thread if you want to see it. All right, I hope you find this useful. Here we go. Robert Kiyosaki grew up having two fathers. One was a highly educated teacher with a PhD. The other one never finished eighth grade. Both men were relatively successful in their careers with substantial incomes, though one died leaving tens of millions of dollars to his family, charities, and church, while the other died leaving bills to be paid. Here are the key things in this book in order for you to wind up like Robert's rich dad rather than his poor dad, right? First takeaway is that education is key. Both dads believe strongly in education, but not the same kind of education. Poor dad would say that a school education, a PhD, good grades, was important for financial success or having a high-paying job. Rich dad, however, would say that financial education is more important to having money. Unfortunately, that's not taught in school, and families are left to teach this to their kids, unfortunately. You'll teach to your kids what you were taught, and if you grew up in that gift card mentality, that spend it all as soon as you get it, and buy lottery tickets and cross your fingers and hope you get rich, then you're going to pass that on to your kids if that's what you got from your parents. So I think it's up to each of us. If you were raised with that kind of a mentality, you know, you can the buck can stop here. You can change that cycle for your family. And if you grew up in the other mentality, just your example of living that way will teach it to your kids. And to the extent it's not, if you see your kids having that gift card mentality long after they're get out of eighth grade, then you should probably sit down and have this conversation with them. The other thing my daughter and I were realizing today is that at her college, I have two kids in college. One is given a meal plan. I pay the same amount pretty much for both meal plans, but one kid is able to go into the cafeteria, get whatever they want, go back, do it again. They can go through five times. They can get as much soup or ice cream or whatever they want, and it's all paid for. My daughter, her school has actual prices. She has a certain allotted amount for the semester, and when she goes into the cafeteria, there are actually prices, and she will say, I want that and that and that, and they add it up and they subtract it from her balance. And at the beginning, last year, I said, well, that's really terrible. They shouldn't do that. I've paid for it. They should just be feeding you kids. You should be able to eat as much as you want. And what we realized today is that's actually really good, because it's teaching kids who may have never had to think about, I have this much money, it needs to last this amount of time, and if I spend it all up front, I'm not going to have it later. And it creates a mindset of having to think it through. So let me give you some advice. If you're a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, or parent, and you have a special kid in your life, don't give them a Barnes & Noble or a Macy's gift card. Don't give them something that will obligate them to this awful mentality that when they have money, they have to spend it. If you are in a position of setting budgets for a department, do not give them the disincentive to save money of saying, any penny you don't spend, well, next year your budget will be reduced by that much. Because you get them in the same mindset, running through the grocery store with their cart going, how can we spend our $500,000 budget? The fiscal year's ending in 3 weeks. How are we going to spend it all? Because you don't want that mindset. You don't want the mindset of running through the grocery store, figuring out how to throw away $100 bills left and right so they're not in your hand, so they don't burn a hole in your pocket. You want to inculcate in young people and in yourself, if you don't have it, the very responsible sense, this is money and I'm not going to throw it away. I'm going to hang on to it. And at the end of the month, or at the end of the shopping trip, the person who has made the wisest purchases and has the most money left met their needs for food and still has the maximum amount of money left. Wouldn't that have been a better TV show to train people? Think about it, right? I don't know how you do that with a gift card or what you could tuck in a birthday card to teach kids that lesson, but it would be a good one. I think one we all need to learn. All right, really quickly, because I'm not going to have much time to finish this Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but I'll put a link to it. I think the book is great. If you read about it, they'll say, you know, he didn't really have that dad, and he, you know. I think had he simply changed one thing in the book, saying, imagine there's a guy with a rich dad and a poor dad and this and this and this, the book would have been perfect. The problem, I guess, with this particular book is that he claimed it was him and it was a real story and these were real people and it wasn't quite right. So he just needed to make a little tweak. The concepts are still absolutely perfect. It's just not a 100% true story, but the information is absolutely wonderful, really valuable. All right, five big ideas. This is on another website that reviewed it. Number one, the poor and the middle class work for money, but the rich have money work for them. All right, there's one. Number two, it's not how much money you make that matters or how much money you win in the lottery. It's how much money you keep. All right. Number three, rich people acquire assets. The poor and the middle class acquire liabilities that they think are assets, like that boat, right? That's a liability. If you spend 10 grand on a boat, that's a liability. It's going to go down in value. If you take that 10 grand and you, invest it in the stock market, if you have a couple hundred grand and you put it in, you know, buy a house, buy a business, not like that salon that she wound up having to work for minimum wage, the one she started and lost, but investments, assets. Think about what you can do with that money to make it grow. So, in my case, I had some tithing money years ago, and I invested it in a book for children. It's called I Won't Take the Mark. You can find it on my website. If you go Catherine-Albrecht.com, go in the menu down to the bottom. It's available on Amazon, and that's what I did. Not only to make an investment for, hoping to get the money back on publishing the book and selling the book, but to make an investment in children's lives, to make an investment in the kingdom. So, yeah, I think Christians have a little different sense of what it is to acquire an asset. All right, number four, financial aptitude is what you do with the money once you make it, how you keep people from taking it away from you, how to keep it longer, and how to make it work for you. And number five, the single most powerful asset we all have is our minds. And I would add to that, the one asset we all have an equal amount of is time. Don't waste it. Don't waste it doing, the things that social media would have you do to waste it. Spend it wisely. All right. I'm Catherine Albrecht. Thanks so much for being with me this hour. See you guys again tomorrow. God bless you. Bye-bye.